Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm particularly excited because in addition to Alison Rudd, and it's always wonderful to have Alison here, but that's not really a novelty, we have not one, but two Yorkshiremen. Two Yorkshiremen who I might describe at the opposite ends of the spectrum. One of them from Harrogate, the other one from Huddersfield.
Which spectrum?
Well, I'll leave it to you, dear listener, to decide. One of them, very, very clever and brooding and somewhat dark. The other one, taller.
Here's Aguero. And Fonte, has he caught him? Referee, well, he's given a free kick to Southampton and he's going to book Aguero for diving. And that's a really controversial moment. It looks as though Fonte caught him. And Fonte's initial reaction, once he's made the challenge, is to point that it's outside the penalty area. I think that speaks volumes.
Matt, Southampton against Manchester City, I think in some ways this might have been the game where City, after that dramatic, emotional, and somewhat fortunate win over Bayern, by getting a result here, they could say, look, we're still sort of in this title race, especially with Chelsea drawing the day before. But I'm interested first to talk about Southampton with you, Matt, because what does this mean for them in the sense that have they been punching above their weight? Is this where they sort of start regressing to a mean?
Well, they clearly have been punching above their weight. The question is how long they can continue to do that. The position has always been slightly false and the fixtures so far have been fairly straightforward, and now they've got a tough run of games. They've got Man United at home next week. They play Chelsea over Christmas at home as well. So it's going to get more difficult. I thought yesterday they actually played pretty well on the counter-attack with two softish goals, really. So I don't think, as 3-0s go, it wasn't the total dribbling it may appear if you just saw the result later on. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's the end for them.
It's funny because you kind of get sort of distracted by the score a little bit, because for the first 70 minutes, City were the better side, but not by a vast amount. It wasn't like watching kind of an FA Cup tie or anything. It was just that City were clearly a bit better than Southampton, but Southampton were basically kind of there or thereabouts. They will drop back. They've got six really hard games coming up. We knew they weren't going to win the title. I don't think there's any reason to think that they can't challenge for a top four spot, which is kind of what we've been talking about, isn't it?
They can easily finish top four. If they play well, draw or win against United, that might act as another spurt, to be honest, because when I interviewed Koeman at the very start of the season, he knew the date of that match straight off without looking it up. After claiming it wasn't an important match, he knew when it was. So I think that does matter to him. You know, what have they had so far, setback-wise, Southampton? They played well against Liverpool and were unlucky to lose. And given they went into that game with no one really knowing how good they were, that could have set them back, couldn't it? That could have made them feel that, oh, maybe we're not as good as we've been told we are by our new manager. They bounced back from that. The game against Pochettino at Spurs, that had a bit of hype around it because, you know, old versus new, and they lost that one. Didn't seem to bother them. Again, started playing well again. And I don't really think they were embarrassed at all against City, so that they can't regroup and start all over again and do another mini run. I mean, they'll keep having spurts of runs, I suspect, and finish fourth or fifth.
But that'll be enough to keep them in there, because they do. So they've got, it's Arsenal, United, and then it's, because the Premier League fixtures are done stupidly, yes. It's Arsenal, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, United, Everton, something like that is Southampton's run. So they won't get as many points from that run as they have from their previous runs of games. But once that's over, they will have another run of relatively straightforward fixtures. And if they win all of those, like United, Spurs, Everton, Arsenal, Liverpool, none of those are going away. They're not going to put a load of points between them and Southampton. So they will be in the race for fourth until at least March, April.
Well, there's always the suggestion that, you know, have they been found out? This is what happens with a team that are surprise package. Under Pochettino, Southampton were found out to a degree in the second half of his good season there. So, you know, City, I think the general feeling is that they reorganised to counter the threat of their excellent fullbacks, Southampton.
Teams
do that all the time, do they have a plan B, C, D?
Do teams actually really get found out, or do they just regress to the mean? Because I look at this, and yeah, the way Pochettino played last year really was different. I think part of the reason they dropped off a little bit was just it was just so physically taxing. But I look at the way Southampton play this year, and they're good, but I see a lot of good players occasionally playing, like great players. It's kind of unrealistic to expect Schneiderlin to play at this level all season long.
Why?
Because he's Morgan Schneiderlin. Because players have highs and lows, and you know, not many people in that position remain at that level for an entire season.
Yeah, but you're not going to say, and I'm not saying that he's as good as Fabregas, but say Matic. You're not going to say, oh, well, it's going to be hard for Nemanja Matic to play this well all season. Will play this well all season.
Yeah, I would argue that the main difference between Schneiderlin and Matic are the players around him. That if you're Matic, there are going to be games where you can not play within yourself, but when you're going through a bad run, you say, all right, well, then I just kind of sit and whatever. And I think if Schneiderlin starts doing that for Southampton, I think they really lose a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know that the lead they've built up over the rest of the pack, as it were, is big enough that it's likely that they will be top four come the end of the season. I'd love it if they were. It would be fantastic.
I think Alisson said they could easily finish top four, that they can finish top four, but it'd still be a major surprise to me and a hell of an achievement.
One other point about Southampton, we've always talked about how like they're like a model club and everything, because Nicola Cortese told us how they were, and their academies actually have been fantastic and everything. I'm wondering, do we sometimes they'll get a little bit caught up in it, in the sense that these guys who they signed this summer, who Pele and Tadic have worked extremely well, but does anybody really believe that it's a source of like tremendous, you know, innovative high-end scouting when Pele played for Koeman and Tadic played against them?
Well, then if you don't believe that, then you are calling the club liars, because they said it was just beautiful synchronicity, because they'd already identified Tadic and Pele as players that would fit their model. And when that was part of the reason they appointed Koeman, was because he agreed with them and knew them. It wasn't... It's a grand plan. I don't see why they would lie to me about that.
No, but I'm not calling them liars, but that seems extraordinarily convenient.
But I've seen their black box room. I've seen their black box where they analyse.
That is the best
scouting system in the country.
How many have you seen there?
But they don't have them anywhere else. That's why they're poaching from Southampton everywhere now, the staff there.
I broadly agree with Ali that I think Southampton do have a very good scouting system, but in reference to the first team stuff, there's no magic key. And it was the same with Graham Carr at Newcastle when he brought in Kabay and Debussy and all those. And everyone said, oh, Graham Carr's cracked the transfer market, isn't he amazing, blah, blah, blah. Johan Kabay was captain of the French champions. Papa Sisse was the second leading scorer in the Bundesliga when they signed him. It's the same with Tadic and Pelle. Tuman knew Pelle, who'd been really effective in Holland. Everyone who'd watched any Dutch football knew Dusan Tadic was the best player in Holland.
We spent a lot of time talking about Southampton, and we could love to talk about them more. We should probably also talk about the champions. Hughie, we should talk about your mate, Mike Jones. What the hell was that with the Aguero dive?
Well, it was a bad decision, wasn't it? What's more unusual is that he seemed very well placed to make the right one and completely got it wrong. We often talk about whether referees are influenced by preconceived notions of what a player's like with their dives. Aguero doesn't really dive, as far as I'm aware, so
not really
can't have been that. He just got it wrong.
Those of us who watched Match of the Day too also show that they show this little snippet where the fourth official, I think, was it Mike Dean? Phil Dowd, sorry, like, kind of did this sort of this eye roll at Zabaleta, sort of supposedly indicating like his dissatisfaction with Mike Jones. I feel like we've had two weekends of absolutely horrid, horrid Premier League refereeing. And honestly, if things hadn't taken a different turn, this could end up determining that, I mean, there really are millions riding on it. Why is Mike Jones getting a second versus third game?
We'd have to ask his assessor. Presumably they tot up the points and he's not made too many errors so far, so he can. It's not done on reputation. It's not done on whether they're liked that week or not. It's just, you know, week in, week out, how many points per game he gets.
Mike Jones is all right. There's much worse referees than Mike Jones.
I'm sure there are worse referees than Mike Jones, but I don't view it like that. I view it as like, this is the Premier League. I want the best referees
Would you want us to import overseas officials? Of
course I would, but I'm not going to go back to... No, I just wonder.
Famously, there are no mistakes in any other league.
Exactly. That's exactly the year two argument I was expecting from her. the other thing with Aguero's performances is that now there's people suggesting that he ranks at or the tier just below Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. I think Samir Nasri said he was even with Messi. Somebody else said he's better than Suarez, which seems to be this incredible benchmark. Clearly somebody hasn't seen Suarez in the last month or so. Is he in that conversation, or is there still an obvious gap between Cristiano and Lionel and Kun Aguero?
I think there is a gap, because they've done it every season in the Spanish League, in the Champions League for 5, 6, 7 years. Aguero hasn't. He has injuries. When he's fit and playing well, he's a great player. But those two you've just mentioned, I think, are still a distance ahead. He could be in the Suarez category. I think that's, as you say, a nice sort of subgroup. Those two are just a level down. But again, he has to stay fit and do it over a sustained period. In the way that Suarez has, he's the outstanding player at City and probably in the Premier League at the moment.
He's a better supporting cast, obviously, than Suarez had at Liverpool as well.
He does, but they don't always deliver for him.
Right.
There was one thing that I noticed about City, just very quickly. Twice, Torre scored, and normally when Torre scores, everyone says, oh, yeah, Torre's back to his best. Twice, once for the sending off, and once just before that, Torre didn't really dally on the ball, but he's really susceptible to a really fast press coming from wide. Mane did it once, and Shane Long did it once. And if you play Torre deep, that happens a lot, whether he scores or not. And I think that's quite important to stopping him finding the rhythm he needs to be really effective.
Do we have a title race on our hands, Alison? It's 6 points right now, given Chelsea's draw.
We might. If City put together a string of wins and Chelsea draw for a bit, then, yeah, I still think Chelsea will win it. But, yeah, it might seem a bit more exciting, possibly.
It's quite hard to see City playing as consistently as they need to do to put real pressure on Chelsea. Really. I mean, they've not, even going back 2-3 years when they've won titles, they've had the odd good run, but they do drop points. And I think this year you can't get away with it, because Chelsea have improved and are ruthless. Even playing poorly Saturday, they never look like losing.
They were 6 points behind Arsenal at this stage last year, and obviously City went on to win it.
As a key word in that sentence.
Exactly.
It's Arsenal.
Arsenal, obviously more fragile than Chelsea. But Roy, and I'll leave you with this thought. City get knocked out of the Champions League, which is entirely possible. And then they're in a situation where they have a week to prepare, basically, for every single Premier League game. David Silva, Dzeko, Kolarov, those guys come back. By the same token, Chelsea, who I don't think have had any significant injuries at all, and Mourinho's playing the same dudes every single week, they go deep in the Champions League. It takes more out of them. Is this such a far-fetched notion? I mean, 6 points?
It's not far-fetched, but I agree with Alisson and Matt. Chelsea will still win the league. It might be a bit more exciting than it looked like it would be a fortnight ago.
Gareth Barry will make sure he doesn't get caught in possession. That's exactly what's happened. Kane with a challenge. Lennon brings it forward. Soldado outside him. Who scores? His first Barclays Premier League goal since early March.
From Chelsea and City to two teams who I think a lot of us, or some of us, had high hopes for it this season, but who started slowly, Tottenham and Everton. Alison, I want to start with you and Harry Kane. Can you explain this phenomenon? I watched this game on Sky yesterday, and he played very well. The commentators made it seem as if everything he did was great and brilliant and totally unprecedented. Everything Soldado, Eriksen, and Lamela did was awful. Is he the real deal, A, and B, why were we not aware of him before? I always thought, you know, under Sherwood and Villas-Boas, he was just some kid who came on and played the final minutes in the game, and I never saw this side to him.
Well, I thought you'd come to me, because at the start of the season I was asked on a web chat who will be the breakout star of the season, and I said Harry Kane.
That's exactly why I came to you. I read all your web chats.
Now that is a lie. But the reason I said Harry Kane was, well, lots of reasons. The problem with Spurs has been they sold Bale and they just drafted in players sort of all over the place. Suddenly looked like a League of Nations. And they didn't settle very well. And I think because none of them played particularly well, other than Eriksen showed a bit of class initially, there was a lot of players underperforming, not playing to their price tag. And amidst all this, you had a local boy. I mean, they keep singing it at Spurs. He's one of our own, Harry Kane. So he doesn't cost the club anything. He's loyal. He's there. He's keen. And the fans knew. The fans have always known when he's made those cameo appearances or he's come on in the early rounds of the Europa League. They've known that he's got something about him. Passion, pace, strength, eye for goal. Sort of uncomplicated nature to him.
He looks like a 1920s swindler. That's what he looks like. He looks like a man in the 1920s who's going to offer you a chance to invest in the stock market just before it crashes.
A swindler, really? I'm not saying he is a swindler. No, I know. To me, he actually seems like sort of an innocent footballer from an innocent time on the maximum wage and, you know, working down the coal mine on the weekend, or actually North London, probably not.
Yeah, loads of coal in North
exactly.
London. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to mess with your area of
near
expertise.
Near the sea as well.
Why this? I mean, do you think it's...
Well, it's, I mean, Alisson has answered this extensively. Well, it's a good story. He is local. He scored goals. A goal scorer will always resonate more than a holding midfield player or a defender, no matter where you're born, I would have thought. So there's two elements to it. There's the fact that he scored goals in Europe and Pochettino refused to play him. So this sort of campaign amongst the fans, certain sections of the media even developed to give him a go. And he's come in and he's scored important goals.
It's almost like a feel-good.
And he contrasts very well and, you know, harshly with Soldado, who's cost £26 million and is a bit languid.
Well, you have the epitome of languid in Soldado. You got the other one with the mother and the witchcraft and the juju and all this stuff and... I mean, is this what it took for Kane to get on the pitch? For defend your boy Pochettino. Why is it taking this long?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Susie just said that, and that was the way it was perceived, that Pochettino refused to play him. So manager takes young player, bloods him slowly as a substitute and in low-profile games, then when he does well, gives him a chance in the Premier League. How on earth can you fault what Pochettino's done with him?
Well, Raheem Sterling was playing regularly at 18.
Yeah, because Liverpool had a unique set of circumstances and they had to play Sterling.
And that might be backfiring.
Well,
Norman Whiteside.
The other thing about Kane, and Ryan Mason is the same thing, there has been absolutely no structure to his development. He's been out on loan not as many times. Mason's had about 53 clubs.
Yes.
But Kane's had a few. There's been no structure. There's a long time that Spurs gave the impression they didn't really think Harry Kane was going to be anything, to be perfectly honest. And from the Pochettino point of view, I think he's probably handled it perfectly. He's given him his chance slowly, and now he's in the team. I don't see what the problem is there. The problem is more, perhaps, that Spurs, for all that they've suddenly got him, Mason and Bentaleb in the team, keeping out expensive signings, maybe they should look at the way that they structure their youth development, not their academy, but the kind of the gap between academy and first team, to make it make more sense rather than just sending... Townsend's the same. Townsend had 11 clubs or something on loan. It's ridiculous.
Spurs have always been big proponents of the loan system and they've passionately defended it because they say we don't want young players sort of just sort of kicking their heels around the club, waiting for a an injury or a moment. They may as well be out playing football, toughening up. They think that if you go to a League One team, for example, you learn far more in a week than you would in a 2 months just sitting around doing reserve team football at Spurs. There is logic to that. A town you don't know very well, you're living in digs, you're not being spoiled rotten because it is League One or whatever, and they come back and they appreciate what they have at Spurs and gives them an extra spurt to go for it. When the pressure grew on Pochettino, why is he still coming off the bench? Why isn't he starting? Give him a chance. He's proved himself. Pochettino said his stats in training aren't up to it. Was that just an excuse? Was he making that up? Or was there something wrong with Harry Kane in training?
I don't know.
But they did seem genuinely reluctant to play him, and I'm sure he didn't bow to pressure from the terraces or the media. But he took some persuading, and if you look at his performances, he probably deserved to start the games before he did.
But yeah, possibly. But it'd be weird to accuse Pochettino of being unwilling to try a young player. That would be a strange thing to accuse Pochettino of.
Okay, enough Spurs. How about some Everton, another team with historically very impressive youth academy. I'm a bit confused because I love Roberto Martinez. We love Everton. We love the overachievement over the years, the positive net spend. And then I think maybe a lot of people felt the way I felt that, oh, look, now if you give Martinez some money, if they spend some money, then, you know, he's been able to do so well without the money. And then you let him keep Barkley and then, you know, Lukaku in a permanent. But they're doing worse. And I kind of feel like they're playing worse, too. You give him money, then he spends it on Besic and Barry, and they look sort of slow and predictable passing the ball. I know McCarthy was out. Is this just a blip from Roberto Martinez, and will he go back to being what he should be, which is football genius?
I think Everton will improve. They were disappointing yesterday. For 20 minutes, they were great, and then they just didn't respond. But after Spurs came back into the game, I think they'll be challenging top six again. I think they're a victim of inflated expectations, really, to be honest. They had a great season last year. Even with the money they've spent, it's just very hard to improve on that, particularly the Europa League. It's well talked about, but I do feel sorry for those clubs, Tottenham and Everton. They're just stuck in this vicious circle where they get Europa League, so they're flogging their guts out. Eastern Europe playing Sunday afternoon makes it so hard to make that next step.
Weren't Everton in the Europa League last year?
Yeah, they were.
Okay, just checking. And then they have a smaller squad last year? Okay, all right, just checking.
The question I'd have with Everton is whether, like, Lukaku's a brilliant player. Would you now, with the benefit of hindsight, you've got 28 million to spend. Do you spend all of it on Romelu Lukaku, or do you spend it on, do you get two £15 million players?
Well, they certainly overpaid for him, there's no question.
Makes Mourinho look very clever again, doesn't
he? He's Chelsea's fourth choice striker.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that that brings us full circle back to the Liverpool approach, right? Buy rather, you know, because one of the arguments you hear about Liverpool is, why don't they buy two £50 million players instead of?
Yeah, but that's a stupid argument in that context, because there's far fewer £50 million players than there are £10 million players. I'm just wondering with Lukaku, and it is a hindsight thing, whether you'd automatically now make that same decision.
I think he's fine. If it works out, he's your centre forward for the next 10 years, or you sell him at a profit. And if he's absolutely pants, he's going to be still going to be 23, 24, and you'll find some mugs. We'll give you £20 million for him. Did Chelsea get a good price? Yeah, I think they could have bargained harder for a different price, because, frankly, in that situation, they held all the cards. It's my understanding that the people who represent Lukaku are actually pretty nice, principled people who maybe weren't prepared to be as nasty as they could have been, or maybe they just did very well when he moved there for a huge amount of money in the first place, and they felt some gratitude towards Chelsea.
Martinez does remain the most hugged manager by his players when they score.
Some goal by Kevin Morales, but
yeah,
just doesn't
play very well.
Right. Time now for Allison's favorite part of the show. It's quick hits. Chelsea are held at Sunderland 0-0. Diego Costa maybe should have been sent off, maybe not. Matt, there's no real reason to be concerned, right? They'll still end the season undefeated.
Presumably being facetious there, I wouldn't be too concerned. I think they'll miss Costa against Tottenham on Wednesday because he's suspended after his fifth booking, but Chelsea's still looking in good shape. They were fantastic against Schalke, and famine often follows a feast.
Manchester United roll over a whole city. Van Gaal says it's their best performance of the season. Alison, how impressed were you? Though they will finish top four, right? Van Gaal will be vindicated?
Maybe. I mean, I put them as fourth at the start of the season.
So did I.
I suppose, and most people did, actually. So, not impossible. They're really nice goals, but I think that might have been Hull's worst game of the season, so maybe not worth drawing too many conclusions from.
You say they're really nice goals. Chris Smalling's was easily my favorite. QPR defeat Leicester 3-2 in a game that we in the game described as, quote, a comedy of errors. Rory, are QPR showing signs of life? And who'll be in a job longer, Pearson or Redknapp?
My favourite stat of the weekend was, I think on Match of the Day, when someone said that QPR had only lost two games at home this season. Presumably out of five, I would have thought, which is an almost meaningless statistic. Pearson, I'd worry for, because we're starting to see the Tony Pulis links. That spectre of Pulis is now hovering over Nigel Pearson, which is not a good place to be. That sort of shadow with a cap on it.
He's like Slender Man.
Yeah. I think, QPR are kind of coming alive. Leicester are dropping like a stone, although they are playing Liverpool this week, which means they'll probably win.
Danny Welbeck scores as Arsenal triumph at West Brom, and Wenger gets emotional at the end. He does not like to be asked about dissenting fans. Matt, what's your take on this? Some supporters holding up a sign saying, thanks for the memories, now leave. Are they a small minority?
They're a minority. They're not small, and they're growing every week and will grow with every bad result.
But then do they shrink after a good result again? Because I see a lot of sort of fickleness amongst
the Arsenal football fans are fickle generally. Arsenal fans are extraordinarily fickle, especially the ones that sit in the main stand by the press box. They're everything's great at the start and it's terrible and it's great again. They do change like the weather. But I think they have a point. I think Wenger isn't improving the team and the club as he could. He's overachieved for 10 years with modest resources. Now he's got more resources, they should be doing better. There's no reason Arsenal shouldn't finish second, but they're not going to.
It might be good also afterwards if people ask him questions about this rather than saying, like, I do not speak about that, I do not comment on that, and getting all, just say, like, hey, people can voice their opinions, they're entitled to them, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect my work.
I did ask him about it and he answered.
Really?
He always says, we live in a society.
Yeah, he loves that phrase.
We have lots of opinions.
He loves describing what we live in.
That's interesting. He does it every week. Because obviously I wasn't there with you, Alison. But
no, it's one of those rare occasions on the world, being the journalist for the Monday paper actually felt good, because the banner was unfurled at the final whistle and he wasn't aware of it until he went into the main press conference. And he was asked about it, and he said, I do not comment on such things.
Yeah.
And he said it several times. But then in the Monday huddle, he was far more forthcoming. If you read my match report, you would know.
I read your match report.
Thank
good
you
for you.
West Ham beat Newcastle 1-0. Big Sam says he has no ill will whatsoever towards Mike Ashley, but what stood out for me was Moussa Sissoko's stupid red card. Alison, he's been arguably their best player during this good run. How does stuff like this happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure I get the question. I mean, it implies that players sort of time their bookings so that there'll be a big gap, so no one says, oh, they acted rashly and stupidly. I think it was 40-something seconds between his first booking and his second booking, and everyone pounces on such things as evidence that the player has lost the plot and might have issues with his personality. These occasionally it will happen. Just, you know, you might score two goals in a minute. It doesn't mean that you're any better than the player who scores one goal in the first minute and one goal in the 80th.
Right, but whereas you can't always control when you score, you can generally control when you do something stupid to get booked.
Well, no, because generally when you get booked, unless
it's stupid.
Yeah, when you get booked, occasionally it's a cynical plotting. You've plotted it. I need to bring down this player or we're going to concede. Usually you get booked for something you don't want to get booked for.
Liverpool go with a lineup featuring just one new signing, one Ricky Lambert against Stoke, and then Huff and Puff before finally breaking through in injury time. Rory, it finally happened. Jared is dropped, at least for now. What did you make of Rodgers? Is he a brilliant tactician, or is this like King Lear and his reason not the need speech?
Going to ignore that on the grounds. I don't know what you're talking about. I thought it was the sensible thing to do for Rodgers. And you're looking at me amazed like that I've not read King Lear. Fine, yeah. And I don't like Shakespeare. There you go.
You don't have to like Shakespeare, but you must have read. You've read King Lear, haven't you, Husey?
No.
Alison, help me.
I've seen it. I've not read it.
I've read a lot. I've read other Shakespeare, enough to know I don't like it.
None of you are familiar with King Lear.
I've heard of it.
Wow. All right. I won't mention where you guys went to university, so it's not to embarrass them.
We did history.
None of us studied literature.
I've read Aristotle in ancient Greek. Will that do you?
Yeah. I've read a bit of Thucydides.
That's irrelevant. It's part of your history. Shakespeare's English. I'm not. Right?
I've read other Shakespeare
Assuming
plays.
Assuming Shakespeare existed.
Well, that's a big debate. But I'd be much more comfortable if we were talking about Homer, to be honest. Can I answer the question? Yeah, it's not finally Gerrard dropped. He didn't play at the Bernabeu, did he?
Yeah, but everybody was dropped. All the good players were dropped for that
game. I think there is a case now with Gerrard. The idea that he can still be Liverpool's key man every week is gone. I think that has to be accepted. The debate now is, can you use him, say, as Man City use Frank Lampard? Or is it better for everybody involved if he maybe goes and takes a 2-year contract with the NY Red Bulls or something like that? I think there's probably advantages to both, but we have to get used to the idea that Steven Gerrard not starting a football match isn't a story anymore. He's at that stage of his career. What Rodgers did on Saturday wasn't spectacular. They didn't play particularly well, but he solidified the team. He played Lucas and Joe Allen. He basically said, we are going to grind out a 1-0 win. And in the circumstances, that was probably a method of some merit, if not the world's greatest plan. Someone made the point at Southampton yesterday that if you look at what Lampard does, and Pellegrini says Lampard makes the difference in the final 25-30 metres, you wonder whether now Gerrard should be used in a similar way. Sparingly, not all the time, further forward, so that you aren't exposing him to... Because he's really, really easy to press out of possession, and the play bypasses him when he plays too deep. So you wonder whether that is now where he should be playing. Not every game, but that's where he's most useful.
But he's never had Lampard's consistent goal scoring.
No, that's true. That's true. But then
spectacular goals. But Frank Lampard, edge of the box, goes in the bottom corner.
He's also probably a better passer and better long range passer, better range of passing than Lampard as well. So
he is
playing further up the pitch.
But he can't dictate the tempo of a game, and you do lose his long range passing.
Tempo. This is one of those things. Like, you don't have to dictate the tempo of the game if you're used in the right position. I mean, I think the question is more, as you said, like, can his legs go and contribute and give you the physical side of the game? But
on the Lampard issue, you're right. Hughes is quite right. But Gerrard, the two seasons where he did play in that position, in that advanced role, was as prolific as Lampard, more or less.
But that's because he had Rafa looking after him.
Absolutely. He's a genius. Speaking of geniuses, Gab, I know the answer to this question, and we've talked about it already. Who is bottom of the Bundesliga?
Jurgen Klopp.
Is it Paderborn?
No, it's Jurgen Klopp, and it's Borussia Dortmund. And He got a little bit spiky after the game. I mean, they lost 2-0 at Eintracht Frankfurt. And he basically came out and he said, well, if you think that, you know, making a coaching change is gonna help this team, then I'm not going to stand in your way. But it's not that simple. Because if I see you show me somebody who's better than me, and I will gladly step aside. I don't know. He's getting a little prickly. A lot of things have gone wrong for them. But there is no excuse to be where they are. Good news is 21 games left. 10 points out of the Champions League. They're probably going to win their Champions League group. There is still a lot to be salvaged here because he has a very good squad. Any other business?
Christmas. It's Christmas, isn't it, early Christmas? So I wondered...
The winter holiday is coming. Yes, Alison.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Winterville.
I watched Elf last night to mark Advent. And I like Christmas. And I wondered, how many people will want a Kirikes shirt for Christmas? And those people who do want one,
no, not yesterday.
How many would be disappointed if they didn't get that little squiggle under the S on the shirt?
Well, what's the point of having it if you don't have the cedilla?
Well, we don't put it in the paper.
That's outrageous. That's disrespectful to Romanians. I hadn't noticed that.
Do we put the weird umlaut over the U in Aguero?
In Aguero, no, don't we do? We have a weird attitude, but then we still spell Marseille with an S on the end. It's pathetic.
If you haven't subscribed on iTunes and Player FM for Android, please do so immediately. Don't even wait for me to finish my outro. Many thanks to my guests today, the excellent Yorkshireman Matt Hughes, the excellent Yorkshireman Roy Smith, and the excellent... Are you from Somerset? Is that right?
Oh, fuck off.
Where are you from? Where are you born?
I'm from Liverpool.
Right. Lancashire.
And the excellent Scouser, as you can tell from her accent, Alison Rudd. Check out thetimes.co.uk. Members get exclusive football, rugby, and cricket highlights free as part of your subscription. And if you're not a member yet, you can take our £1 digital trial today. Just search Time Sport online. In the meantime, we're all on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Small details are big surfaces. tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.